Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Please, ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
What was it you were saying about my voice?
It's loud, it's strong, and it's good, and I appreciate your support.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
At least every year I get emails and phone calls from people who say, does anybody still remember that date, December the 7th, and the attack on Pearl Harbor? Well, there are at least some of us who do, and some of us who truly appreciate what happened that day, what was done to the United States, about the call that it made for the United States to enter that conflict. Today is National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day 2017, the 76th anniversary of the date that will live in infamy, to honor the 2,403 citizens of the United States who were killed in the Japanese surprise attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii on December 7th, 1941. Glad to be with you on this Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And a lot of Conspiracy Theory Thursdays, I don't actually come up with a really good conspiracy theory, but I have one on Al Franken. That may be more than a conspiracy theory, but I'm going to get to that in just a moment after I tell you a couple of other things that are on the agenda today. But here's your invitation to take part in Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for the Pacific Northwest, live on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll today, and I always worry when I see nearby states doing crazy things that craziness will spread elsewhere. A California lawmaker has introduced legislation. He wants to ban by 2040 the gasoline-powered automobile from the state of California. Now, I think this is lunatic in any case, but it's especially lunatic and it's especially unmindful of the other people who live in that state. It may be that there are people who live in San Francisco or live in Los Angeles or live in San Diego who get by just fine with mass transit. But there are a lot of other people who live in that state who would not get by just fine because they live in the parts of the state where having an automobile is not just a luxury, it's an absolute necessity. And yet the folks in the big cities seem to forget that. And I worry that this same kind of lunacy might actually spread to other parts of the West Coast, including Oregon and Washington and Idaho, as we see people trying to say, we have to stop generating all this CO2 or we're going to be in trouble. So that's our Twitter poll today. You can find it at LarsLarson.com and on Twitter at Lars Larson Show. In yesterday's Twitter poll, we asked you, should the states include at least three gender options on birth certificates? I ask this because the state of Washington right now is taking public testimony about whether or not to add a third option to the birth certificate, not male, not female. I don't know if they're going to call it other or some other crazy fancy term to indicate not male, not female, but somewhere in between. I don't think it makes any sense, but you don't either. 98% of you said no, the state should not include three gender options on birth certificates. Only 2% of you, and usually we get, 5-6% on most questions where somebody will divert from the norm. No, 98% of you said no in this case, only 2% said yes. So vote in our quick poll. And before I do anything else, I have to roll. No, I'll tell you what. I'm going to hold the Al Franken conspiracy theory till after we've done nonsense, because we've got a few other things to talk about today. And I do want to get your phone calls and emails, but I'll tease you with it this way. Al Franken did not resign today. And that is a literal fact. And I'm going to tell you why he did not resign today. And I'll tell you why he framed it the way that he did. He's being sneaky, which as a Democrat and a member of the Democrat Party shouldn't surprise you one little bit. First, let's do a little bit of Northwest nonsense.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
You know, Ted Wheeler came into office as mayor of Portland less than a year ago, and he's already turned into a whiner. Case in point, Ted Wheeler's Twitter war with the U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Ben Carson. Wheeler ran for the office that he holds, promising that he knew how to get the job done. But Dr. Carson got on the radio this week and said that government funding is not the only solution to the housing and homeless problems of West Coast cities. And I think Dr. Carson is absolutely right. He's factually right. It's not the only solution. In fact, I would venture to say it's not even the best solution. But that whipped Mayor Wheeler into a frenzy, who went on Twitter and declared, "We can't do these projects for housing and fixing the homeless problem without government help." The funny thing is, Ted, you are the government. Now you're saying that simply building housing, something the private sector can do if you just get the city government out of the way, and finding shelter for some street people and drug addicts is beyond you without help from Uncle Sam? You're in politics, Ted, so if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran-owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
Well, today's Daily Grill, in honor of the homeless housing problem, at the same time that Ted Wheeler of Portland is whining about how he can't solve homelessness without help from the federal government, King County's homeless population, as of today, now ranks as the third largest in the nation. In other words, a city that's 18th largest in the nation is now third largest in the nation, according to, well, some press reports today. Seattle is now running only behind Los Angeles and New York City, considerably bigger cities, when it comes to the homeless problem. I think there's another reason that they have a big problem with the homeless, and I think it's because the Pacific Northwest, and Seattle is not alone in this, has made these cities particularly attractive to people who are without means to support themselves and who've come here because they find it an attractive place to live. Today's best email, but you can always send more, to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Papa Shoehorns, the perfect Christmas gift for everyone. On the web at PapaShoehorns.com. This email has to do with the story I told you yesterday about the state of Washington considering adding that other option on the birth certificate other than male and female. Steve says, "Lars, if the people of Washington state can't figure out the sex of a baby at birth, then maybe they should also remove the designation of race from their books. We wouldn't want to unfairly advantage one person over another with preferences and set-asides based on race, right?" Thanks, Steve. Steve, thank you very much. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I actually feel very good that I have a conspiracy theory for today. And I want to tell you something. There is a soundbite that I'll play, and I want you to listen carefully to what Al Franken says. Because just like on that day, if you take yourself back about 20 years, when you heard William Jefferson Clinton of Arkansas say, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky," we all had to go back and say, we had to parse his words and say that in Arkansas, perhaps the things that Billy Clinton and Monica Lewinsky did not constitute sexual relations by Bill Clinton's definition. I think you need to parse the words of Al Franken, who did not resign today, although you're going to see a bushel basket full of headlines this afternoon and headlines tomorrow morning on social media, on news media on the web, on cable television, saying Al Franken gave a resignation speech. Listen carefully to exactly what he said.
"Today I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate."
Okay, so "I will be in the coming weeks resigning." Now, I'm not making a narrow distinction for no reason. there's actually a logic behind why I think Al Franken is constructively lying to you. First, let's accept this. Al Franken did not resign today, and I believe I know the reason why. The Minnesota molester did not resign, and he did not apologize today. In fact, he suggested that many of the claims against him are untrue. So he effectively called the women who've accused him liars. So I have a conspiracy theory to explain why he did not resign today, because I can't find another reason that makes any sense, and maybe you can for me. Less than a couple of hours ago, Al Franken took to the floor of the U.S. Senate and gave a speech. Every news site out there is describing Franken's statement as a resignation speech, but it was nothing of the kind. I think there is a reasonably good chance that Franken will renege on his vow to resign in the coming weeks, because remember, that's all he promised today, a promise that he will resign. Here are the actual words. I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate. Franken also mentioned that he thought the Senate Ethics Committee would come to the conclusion that he had brought no shame on the body, the Senate. So rather than delivering a resignation speech, Franken only announced that he would quit in the coming weeks. Why the delay? Is Al Franken worried that he won't be able to go to the congressional Christmas party? Not likely. So why wait? I think I know the reason. Next Tuesday, Alabama voters choose a new United States senator. There's a good reason to expect that those voters will choose Judge Roy Moore. Now, no matter what you think of him, the polls show that he is leading his Democrat Party challenger, despite literally hours of network time and newspaper space devoted to disparaging him for allegations that could be true or not. The RNC had withdrawn its support. The RNC has now given its support back to Judge Moore. President Trump had supported Moore's GOP opponent in the primary, but now he has extended his support to Judge Moore. Even Senate Leader Mitch McConnell, who originally, quote, hoped that Moore would withdraw, now says the choice is up to the voters of Alabama, as it should have been all along. Public opinion polls showed that the electorate doesn't believe the mainstream media, and for good reason. So when the voters elect Moore next Tuesday, and the Senate refuses to exclude Moore, as some have suggested, I think at that point, Al Franken will renege on his promise, using Moore's election as his excuse. Franken can then play the hero. I'm here to save the United States of America and the Senate from Judge Roy Moore. And Franken can simultaneously demand equal justice. If you're not going to keep that child molester out, why do I have to go? Now, I use Occam's razor all the time, least hypothesis. It's the only sensible explanation I can find for why Franken would have delayed his departure from the Senate by saying today not I am resigning, but I plan to resign in the coming weeks. There's nothing in the replacement process in Minnesota that would be affected by waiting a few weeks. In fact, the only way you could affect Al Franken's replacement in Minnesota is if he stayed in office till June of next year, late June, and at that point, the replacement process would be different. So believe his promise to resign if you like, but I'm going to keep my powder dry. Franken's character, Stuart Smalley, always said, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. And actors, remember, are liars for a living. Now, that's my conspiracy theory. The other thing I'd like to suggest to you is less of a hardcore, hard-edged argument, but it's more one that appeals to the heart issues. If you were ever fired from your job, no matter what your job is, whether your job is at the local supermarket or in the United States Senate, if you were ever fired from your job for things that people found disgusting, would you ever want to show your face in that place again? Al Franken, today, was effectively fired. Yesterday, 36 of his fellow Democrats in the Senate demanded that he be gone. Now, if at your workplace, the majority of the people who should have been on your side because of labels said, that guy has to go, would you want to show your face in that place again? I would think not. And yet Al Franken is apparently planning to keep showing up at the United States Senate for weeks. And since we have the Christmas holidays coming up, I'm assuming that weeks means not just the next 2 weeks, but maybe three, which then pushes it into the new year. And that's why I suspect the Moore theory, that Al Franken is waiting to see what happens on Tuesday. And I think the odds are that Roy Moore is going to get a majority. He will get the vote. The head of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, has said that it is up to the people of Alabama. Having said that, if Roy Moore shows up as an elected official from Alabama, and then Mitch McConnell says, well, we're not going to seat him. Do you know, there really is no, I'm going to consult with some election experts today to find out what happens then, because the fact that the Senate refuses to seat him, if the Senate were to do that, I don't think they're going to, and McConnell's already sent that signal, but if they were to refuse to seat him, it does not unelect him back in Alabama. So there is no next step. If we lose a president, God forbid, or lose, you know, a member of Congress, there are procedures for replacing them. But if the Senate simply says we're not going to seat him, it doesn't unelect him in Alabama. It doesn't fill the seat there. And then Mitch McConnell and the Republicans would have to say, here's our explanation as to why we are rejecting the choice of the voters of Alabama, which is not going to be a really popular message anywhere. So I think this is what's going on, and I think Al Franken is betting that Tuesday night's election result is going to give him the edge he needs to come back out and say, I take back my promise to resign. Because you chose Roy Moore, I now have a reason to demand that you let me stay. Now, if somebody has a better theory, I'd like to hear it. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to John in Salem. John, we're close to the bottom of the hour break, but I'm glad to have you on. What's on your mind?
Well, yesterday you were talking about Woodland School District.
We had the superintendent on from Woodland Schools, and he was explaining why they're teaching the teachers Spanish instead of teaching the parents English.
Right. And one thing he said was it takes a long time to teach English to these Spanish students. And I wanted to point out, my son went on an exchange to Germany in his junior year of high school.
Yeah.
And he did not know German. He got there, his host family put him in a two-week cram course, and then he got thrown into using public transportation and all to get to school. And school was in German. No second language. No help, just straight German. And he floundered around, but between September and December, he learned German and was fluent in it, could read in it, write in it, compose in it. And he's decided to go back to college in Germany.
That's a very good example. I think you can bring kids up to speed amazingly fast. Unless, of course, the union wants to keep those jobs around. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And a lot of you have emailed to me and you've asked me, Lars, you've been a champion on this global super tanker, the big 747 that has been converted to fight fires that finally was used by Cal Fire earlier this year. Well, now we have these tremendously devastating fires that are going on right in the vicinity of Los Angeles. And I thought we'll reach out to Jim Wheeler, who's the CEO of Global Super Tanker, and find out what's happening with their asset and whether or not it's going to be able to be put to use to fight some of these fires. Jim, welcome back to the program. And you got the call early on, didn't you?
We did, Lars, and thank you very much for having us again. I will tell you that we are in position and have been. What we're waiting for is a break in the winds so that we can fly. The problem that's existing now in the fires is the winds are so high that when you go to spread any retardant or suppressant on the fire, it just blows off. So we've got to get a little weather calm before we can get in and help the men and women on the ground that are fighting so desperately to retard these fires. That Thomas fire is over 100,000 acres, and it has grown rapidly. I mean, the fire was growing at the rate of an acre a minute, and even faster than that at times. The forecast, though, is not good, and that's what's very troublesome right now. I've got my crew down in at the airplane sitting ready to go. We're awaiting the call, and if there is any break, we will be airborne.
Well, you made the point to me that a lot of people assumed the big plane couldn't fly in these kinds of winds. And clearly, if they have hurricane force winds, that's the kind of weather that I don't think anybody wants to fly any kind of aircraft in. But the biggest problem is not the winds and the airplane flying. It's the winds and spreading the retardant so that the retardant doesn't fall out of the sky right onto the flames, but instead gets blown away and doesn't have an effect, right?
That's absolutely correct. Look, we've flown this airplane in over 100-mile-an-hour winds. The winds don't have much impact on the airplane. You might not like being jostled around in 100-mile-an-hour winds, but I've been on it when we've had the northern Pacific winds coming back over into Anchorage back in my Evergreen days. And it's always a delight when you have those as tailwinds, I might add. But right now, there's just not a lot we can do, and it's incredibly frustrating because we're ready, willing, and available. CAL FIRE put us out early. We got in there, we got loaded, and we got ready to go. So men and women that are on the ground are doing yeoman's work right now. They sure need some help, and we need a little break from the weather. So prayers are going out to get a clear sky and a day without so much wind.
Boy, I sure hope you get that, because can you imagine what it'd be like to be on the ground knowing that if you've got 70-mile-an-hour winds, we're talking about fires that, as you said, can cross huge stretches of ground and just overrun a ground crew.
They can, Lars, and they're overrunning houses. They're overrunning livestock. I mean, it's really serious. And here's the other problem. The recent weather forecast for North Cal is coming back to real dry, high temperatures and possible winds again. So the fire season in California is not over. Typically, we don't see it in December. But it is continuing, and the forecast is not in our favor at the moment.
Wow. Well, in the meantime, who else is calling on the global supertanker from around the world?
Well, right this minute, things are fairly calm down in South America and Australia, but they're about to heat up because their season starts usually towards the end of December, early January. So we were actually doing some maintenance work in preparation to go to the Southern Hemisphere sometime Christmas or later, when we got the call to come out to California and help.
Now, how about this? I know the last time you and I talked, it was right after the Inspector General or the Government Accountability Office had come back with a report on the Forest Service rejection of you, or rejection of the global supertanker. What's happened in that regard? Is Forest Service getting any warmer to the idea of bringing on GST to help them out next year?
Lars, I'll know next week. We have a meeting with the Forest Service in Washington, D.C., which I'm very thankful for, in fact, a week from today. And as soon as I get through with that meeting, I'm going to have a much better idea of what their tempo and demeanor is.
Very good. Well, let us know. We're pulling for you, Jim, and we really appreciate what you can do. And we understand in those kind of winds, you just can't use the tool, just doesn't work in those kind of conditions.
Well, that's correct. And, Lars, I'd like to thank you and all your listening audience. I know that occasionally you get the emails and pass them on to me. I'm happy to try to answer every one of them personally.
Well, and we're glad for that as well. Jim, thanks very much.
Thank you, Lars.
You bet. That's Jim Wheeler from Global Supertanker. Let's go down to Gary in Bellingham, listening on KGMI. Gary, you had a couple of thoughts on Al Franken and his non-resignation speech today?
Well, I did. More kind of to figure out what's going on here. So I listen to you quite frequently, and, you know, probably closer to 100% of the time, I pretty much agree with what you're saying. The other point is, whatever happened to due process? We're not due processing any of these people.
Well, what would you like, Gary? I care about due process too, but tell me what due process you like. There is not going to be a criminal trial of Al Franken. There is no real civil trial. I guess some of the women could sue him, although I don't see that in the cards. So if you'd like to have due process, where would that due process be found and in what form?
The due process according to the law. And if they want to sue him, then let them sue him if they want to do that. But you can't continue to do this. It's going to leak down into every piece of society. It doesn't matter this. It'll be anything, and pretty soon it'll just leak and get stale and sticky and ugly, and that's what it's doing in America.
Except that, Gary, hold on. You're complaining about a process that occurs everywhere else as well. If you're in business, for example, some of the things that are accused of some of the other celebrities, movie actors and producers and people like Harvey Weinstein, there are cases where there is no criminal trial. There may not even be a civil trial. But if the United States Senate and its membership, especially its Democrat members, say, we don't think this man deserves to be in our body anymore. And they come out and publicly announce that they would like him to leave. And 36 plus Democrats have come out and said they want Al Franken gone. There is no due process for that, nor should there be. They're allowed to do that. If the legislature in Olympia or the legislature in Salem came out and said, we think one of our members has done something so dastardly that we don't want him in our body anymore, they're free to do that. And he's free to tell them to go, you know, jump off a cliff somewhere. But he hasn't done that. He came out today and announced that in the next couple of weeks that he will, you know, he will submit his resignation. And I've told you why I'm skeptical of him doing that. I think he's waiting for the Roy Moore vote next week. But what kind of process would you like when this is dependent on the point of view of the people that you're serving with as a government official?
The people who elect you should take care of their business. If they don't want him in that position, they should recall him. They should do everything they can civilly and criminally to take care of that.
And you would say that until then, he should stay in the U.S. Senate, even though 36 members of his own party have said they don't want to work with him anymore?
Just because the crowd gets up in the air because they're politicians doesn't mean that that's fact or that's true or that's right. The fact is that he was elected. He should stay in his position.
See, ordinarily, Gary, ordinarily I'd agree with you. But let's try a Northwest example. You saw a governor from the state of Oregon, John Kitzhaber, come out and announce his resignation. He wasn't subject to a vote. He wasn't subject to he could have been recalled. And recall was available, but it's not available for a newly elected official because he had to be in office for 6 months before the recall could even start. But he came out and announced his resignation because staying was a problem. It was problematic for him to stay. So you're suggesting that he would tell the people of Minnesota, the majority of the people that I work with will not do business with me. Don't want to have any connection to me, but I'm going to stay here representing you. What would he be delivering for the people in Minnesota at that point if most of the people in that body don't want to have anything to do with him?
That's really up to the people who elected him.
No,
that is not up to us. That's not up to other politicians. That is not up to hearsay. That's not up to he said, she said. That's not up to building a big case against him. That's up to the fact is that you are elected on your position and you can be unelected on your position.
So do you think that Mayor Ed Murray of Seattle should have stayed in his office?
You know, I'm not in his shoes. My point is...
But you're not in Minnesota either.
But the point is, the people who elect you should be the people who unelect you.
Okay, I got the point. And there is no opportunity for them to do that absent some kind of long, very involved recall campaign during an election year, which would be really problematic, I think, for everybody involved. And it would force everybody involved to choose sides, which I have a feeling the Democrats don't want to do. And I have a feeling that Al Franken may be withdrawing that promise to resign as soon as maybe Wednesday of next week. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Boy, it sure didn't sound like an apology to me from Senator Al Franken, who, by the way, did not resign today. He promised that he will resign in the coming weeks, a promise that I believe that he will renege on. Naysayer Phil joins me now from Bellevue. Hey, Phil, thanks for listening on KVI. What's on your mind?
Hey there, Lars. Big fan. But at this time, I do disagree with you because I think Franken will resign, and I think that the reason he's doing it in this way is because of the news cycle. He's trying to stretch his resignation out as long as possible so that it doesn't fall off the news until after Roy Moore wins, and then they're going to continue this media narrative. Right now, this media narrative the Democrats are pushing is sucking up all the oxygen in the news, and they want to keep it that way and stretch it out for as long as possible. And they're going to proclaim after Roy Moore wins and then Al Franken resigns, our guys resign, the Republicans don't resign, even though the cases are totally different. There's hard evidence about Franken and an admission. Moore denies it, Trump denies it, et cetera. But they're going to try to draw that bright line and keep the media narrative going as long as possible. And that's
you could be right. But I thought yesterday when we first heard of this, I said, look, the Democrats want to clear the decks so they can go after Moore straight ahead and not hear the answer. Well, if your guy stays, why should Moore be seated? But the reason I believe that Franken may renege on it is because he could still be at the front of the news cycle by doing this, by resigning today. The fact that he's holding back from a full resignation, there's the only advantage to it, as you say, is that it might be used against Moore, except that after it's used against Moore and after Moore has had all this negative attention and he still gets elected, what is their argument going to be? Because with Franken, the people of Minnesota never got a chance to say how they'd vote if they were voting on somebody they knew had done some of these things. The people of Alabama, no matter what you think about Judge Roy Moore, whether you think he's completely guilty of everything he's alleged to have done, or he's not guilty of anything he's alleged to have done, or a combination of the two, that he's guilty of some and not guilty on others, the voters have heard every negative thing about him. And if they still vote for him, what argument are the Democrats going to use for not seating him?
Well, I think what happens if Moore wins and Franken reneges, as you predict, I think the Democrats are going to go to Mitch McConnell and say, hey, let's make a deal. Let's eject both of them. And I think that's what they would do in that case.
And they might do that. But see, it would take Al Franken reneging to give them that piece of leverage. Because if McConnell actually believes that Franken is going to resign no matter what, then Franken would have said today, I will resign effective December 20th, or I will resign effective January 1. He didn't do any of that. In fact, he pushed back on all the charges against him today. In some of the sound bites that I've got that I can play a little bit later on, he comes very close to saying that none of the things he's alleged to have done, he actually did. And he seems to think that because he hasn't brought shame and disrepute on the U.S. Senate, that the Senate Ethics Committee would agree with him. And he said so in the speech today.
My final explanation to that, Lars, is that by doing what he's doing, he gets to make two speeches. He gets to make the speech today, and he gets to make his resignation speech on the last of the day when he finally decides to announce that he's actually doing it.
Fair enough. When do you think that's going to be? Before Christmas or after Christmas?
I think it'll be in the news cycle. I think he'll basically be feeling the waters after Roy Moore wins and deciding, oh, is it dying off in the news? Is, you know, Washington Post not covering it, CNN not covering it, New York Times? Okay, now is the time to do it. I mean, I think that's how cynical and opportunist he is.
You may be right, and I appreciate the call. Let's go to Ben in Eugene. Ben, thanks for listening on KPNW. What's on your mind on this Conspiracy Theory Thursday?
Thank you for taking my call. The thing about Mueller's investigation is what I wanted to talk about.
I think it's
one of the largest conspiracy maneuvers ever before the public. And when you look at this Peter Strzok, I believe, or
it's Strzok is the way you pronounce it. It's spelled funny, but it's Strzok. Go for it, because we're going to be up at the top of the hour soon.
Well, anyway, Peter Strzok has been so closely tied to the Clintons the whole way through the investigation under Comey. And he was the one who helped doctor the change of words to get away from the statute.
Yep.
And he's the one that's also, they believe there's a theory that he was the one who actually signed off
on Hillary. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and your emails in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. We're live all over the Pacific Northwest in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network, and it's a real pleasure to welcome back Curry County Commissioner Cort Boyce, who has an announcement to make about his political future. How you doing, Cort?
Great to be on your show. Thank you very much on this special day for remembering all of our veterans that made the ultimate sacrifice, did not come home, Lars, just thousands. And I picked this day because the veterans are the ones that we just never want to forget. And It's just great to be on, and again, this Pearl Harbor Day.
Well, and you and I don't have to talk about fires. It's now California that's dealing with that problem, although you were dealing with it the last time we talked to you on the air. But you made a decision about a job that you want to run for that you think you'd acquit yourself well in.
You know, I think we used to call them the House of Representatives. But yes, Lars, I'm going to run for Congress. And the driving force here is the management policies of our public lands that are just absolutely in shambles. As you know, and by the way, I just got to extend gratitude to you. One of my friends said, "You're going on, Lars?" I said, "Yeah, I've been invited." He says, "Lars is a pillar." I said, "I know."
Well, thank you for that.
We're the ultimate announcement here with you, and again, just gratitude there. But you know, Oregon grows the best forest on the planet, and it's part of our heritage, our rich legacy in this state. It not only grows fast, as you know, Lars, but it grows the incredibly wonderful quality. And some of our mills are struggling to get logs. That's what happened in Joe County, Cave Junction area for Rough and Ready. And we've got to change these policies. Everything good that comes out of the forest, clean water, clean air, wildlife habitat, fish habitat. If we manage well, it is prosperity for this state. We're the envy of the world, and we've got to get back to those policies. And I think that's the message I've got to offer to people, and it's not being done enough. And the people that are working that way, in that direction, they need help. They need support.
By the way, what's your site online is courtboysforcongress.org.
Correct. The word for, and it's just up to date. It should before it actually gets to the search engines are telling me it might be 1 day to two, but it'll be up. And appreciate any visits and any recommendations. Feedback, all welcome, of course.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to mention to you, the other day there was a story in the news, because you know that we cover stories from all the Northwest states, but the story was how there was, I think it was $1.4 million that had been made available to be shared among the 14 or 15 or 16 Northwest counties that are timber dependent, that it was money that was coming from the federal government. And I remember thinking when I saw that story, not to diminish too much what that program does, but you wouldn't need that program at all if you were actually logging all those forests sensibly, the ones that are on federal lands. And imagine these counties where some of them don't even have law enforcement anymore. Some of them are down to no sheriff's deputies. They're down to no jail services. They're down to where they've effectively said to citizens, make sure you've got a gun, because when you call 911, you may or may not get somebody from the state police, and they may or may not be there in half an hour or an hour. These are really, really desperate situations. And I imagine 14 counties scrapping over, you know, dividing up $1.4 million or $100,000 each. $100,000, does that even fund one sheriff's deputy in a car? You know, and I'm thinking that's how desperate things are. And when they were actually logging out of these forests that you mentioned and cutting the trees down and running the sawmills, and there was property taxes being paid to the local county, there were income taxes going to the state and the federal government, there were severance fees going to the U.S. Treasury, and there were fees going to the counties. You know, $100,000, they wouldn't have sniffed at it, but they would have said, hey, that's a small deal. We've got a well-funded county government. But now they don't. And I really want to see somebody like you get these policies changed, because then we don't have these counties just trying, you know, down there looking for any crumbs they can get because they've got almost nothing.
I think that's, Lars, I think that's why around the country, especially in the West, you see guys like myself are looking around. We don't recognize our country anymore, and not having adequate law enforcement. You know my family's background in that, and it's just not acceptable. I am on the board of directors, just recently elected the ONC, the 18 counties, which you point out. Yes, that is part of the administration, though, I think, trying to help us in the rural areas get back to what the original law on the ONC Act, for example, was intended for. My grandfather, back in the late 30s, acts as one of the four key county commissioners that negotiated that contract with the Forest Service, with the BLM. And to your point, in those days, they were the sustained yield would be 500,000 acres. It eventually, as you know, became law through passed through Congress. Right now, on a good year, averaging about 220 million board feet is all we're able to log of the 500 million that we're supposed to log. The irony is 1.2 million acres grows on those 1.2 million board feet, grows on those acres per year within the 18 counties. So we're not even logging about 25%. And trees are going to grow in Oregon, and they're going to grow fast, and they're going to grow healthy, whether we want to harvest them properly or not. And so some of our leaders have had a chance to recognize that. It's not so much – it is the Forest Service and their policies, but they are bound by what – they're not responsible – environmental groups. They are green activists, and they have to be challenged, and they have to be at every level of government. And I think you're going to see that. It's a fight that we have to step up and be willing to take on.
All right. If you want to help him out, you can find him at courtboysforcongress.org. That's C-O-U-R-T, courtboysforcongress.org. And you're going to have my endorsement. Court, thank you very much, and congratulations, and good luck on the run for Congress.
More later. Thanks again, Lars.
Absolutely. And glad to talk to his opponent, too, at some point. But his opponent hasn't been on this program in years. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to Mike in Medford. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, nice to talk to you again, Lars. I had a thought occurred to me about Stuart Smalley.
Yeah.
There have been 15 senators expelled since the founding. Coincidentally, 14 of them were Democrats. And you got these 36 Dems that have supposedly told him he should quit.
Yep.
Well, he didn't. So wouldn't it be smart for McConnell and the boys to push for an expulsion vote and put those 36 on the spot?
Yes, it would, because you know what it takes. It takes a two-thirds vote of the Senate to expel somebody, to say that you're not seated, and they now have that. If you assume they have all of the Republicans and 36 of the Democrats, they have well over the number needed to be able to expel Stuart Smalley, or Al Franken, as he's known. And I don't know, do you have the same suspicion that I do about why he didn't make a full resignation today, even though all the headlines you're seeing today talk about him giving a resignation speech? He did not, in point of fact, resign from the Senate.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And that's why McConnell and the gang should push it.
I think so, too. But then again, you're asking Mitch McConnell to do something smart, and I'm not sure he would do that. Back in just a moment. Glad to have you with me all over the Pacific Northwest on the Radio Northwest Network. The number to dial in for honestly provocative talk radio and where naysayers go to the head of the line is 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And by the way, I noticed that, they're pulling out all the stops at the Seattle Times fish wrapper. There's a story in there about Matt Manweller, who's a member of the Washington legislature. He is a Republican. He has been a guest on this show going back, I think, close to 20 years. But he's also a teacher at Central Washington University. And when I saw this headline, I said, well, I've got to take a look at this, because I thought Matt Manweller was a great guy. And it turns out you can read the whole story, and he's still a great guy. Guess what happened? He had some students who accused him of some things. One, pair of students said, Professor Manweller, we went out to drinks with him. Now they're old enough to do that. And he propositioned us as a bar. And the university investigated this years ago, and they found no substantiation. And then there was another small complaint, relatively lightweight complaint, and they found no action there. But they did hold up his tenure for 1 year. But then when they granted him tenure, they gave him the back pay because of the delay. And I thought all of this was over years ago. But the Seattle Times fish wrapper decides he's a Republican, he's from Central Washington, and we're going to run him up the flagpole just because we can. Well, I guess if you're going to do that, do you think that's a legitimate way to do business? 866. Hey, Lars. By the way, Matt Manweller is welcome back on this program anytime he wants to come on. And I think he is a great guy. And he has gone through those slings and arrows. And I'm sure that when you're teaching at a community college or at a smaller college, that you may occasionally have some students who don't like the things that you say. And if they want to go in and make an allegation, fine. But they best back it up. Because I don't take it too... In fact, there's an interesting story in the news today about a guy who faced a false complaint from 15 years ago. And he's been on appeal for the last 15 years. And finally, they said, you're right. He was falsely accused. But can you imagine going through all the punishment for the last 15 years because of that? Let's go to James. Hey, James, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Go cheesemakers. I was going to go grocery shopping today, and I went by Burger King on 50th and Powell.
Yeah.
And the flag was not at half mast. So I went in to ask them if they could put it at half mast to honor the 2,400 people who died so we weren't called Japan.
Now, what did they say? Did they react or... Who's behind?
They got mad at me and told me they hate the flag and that they're not going to.
No, hold on. Who said they hated the flag? This one's
the manager of Burger King and the lady that was working the drive up window.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. The only reason I'm holding back on that is I'd like to hear from their side of the story as well before I damn them for that kind of attitude. But that seems like a lousy attitude. But it would be nice to see the flag flying at half staff because of what happened 76 years ago at Pearl Harbor. Let's go to Perry in Seattle. Hey, Perry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show, and thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I can't help but thinking, though, that you and a lot of people are missing what is actually happening with the liberal press eating their own by taking down some of the liberal favorites. And I can't help but think that there's almost a trap being baited. And the Republicans are jumping on board and dumping some of their own. And there's a feeding frenzy going on with sexual activity in the world around us. And I can't help but think that what's happening is that the press is lowering the moral equivalence threshold, and their sights are set on Donald Trump. So here we are prosecuting all these cases and getting everybody in a feeding frenzy, and that's what the ultimate goal is. And our talk radio hosts and everybody else are abetting this thing.
Well, I'd agree. I understand the theory you're rolling out, that somehow by getting all these other cases, Harvey Weinstein and Al Franken and Kevin Spacey and everyone else, that there's this coordination going on in the media, and that the idea is if we take down enough liberal icons, including some, Harvey Weinstein himself was the source of $700 million in bundled donations to the Democrats. So in other words, you're talking about taking down some people who are real assets to the Democrats, and that by doing all that, they'll then be able to say, see, we took down all these people, now you have to take down Trump. The problem with the theory, Perry, is that in Trump's case, as is the case with Roy Moore, the voters were well aware of the allegations against Donald Trump, and they chose him anyway. And that's a tough one to beat, because when you say, well, if the voters only knew what Al Franken had been up to, well, they didn't. But they certainly knew what Donald Trump had been accused of doing. They'd heard the Access Hollywood tape. They'd heard all the discussion of it, and they chose him anyway. So how does taking down, if you assume that the entire press corps is somehow working in unison to go out and systematically take down, and most of the people who've been taken down in the last 2 months in entertainment and in news and everywhere else have been liberals. I mean, Matt Lauer? My goodness, you couldn't find a better asset in the news media. So you say, we're going to throw Matt Lauer under the bus, and then we're going to argue that, therefore, Donald Trump has to be taken down. How does that work?
Which makes my point more compelling.
Here's
the deal. What if somebody, they've got something else on Trump that they haven't used at this point, but they bring it out, and all of a sudden, there's a... this whirlwind of activity that's gone on, all of a sudden the press has got credibility because they've taken everybody else down. then they've got a clear pathway to do it. So that's my worry.
Well, but the pathway with who? Who do they make their argument to? Because the American public, the American voters who chose Donald Trump, and they chose him after hearing for a year and a half what a creep he was from the mainstream media. I mean, because that's what they heard. They heard it night after night after night, what a, you know, unabashed, unvarnished creep that Donald Trump was. And they heard all of that, and they still chose him. And I chose him because I endorsed him and I voted for him. And
absolutely,
I think he's been a fantastic president, and he continues to get
phenomenal.
Better. So who do you make the argument to then?
Well, I think that what they're doing now is they're implementing the legislative body type of activity where they're getting the Senate involved. And if you encourage McConnell to take down...
Well, no, but they need to get the House, because remember, if you want to impeach Donald Trump, which is the only way it's going to be removed, it starts in the House. The trial's in the Senate, but impeachment starts in the House. So you think you're going to get a majority of Republicans in the Republican House to vote for the impeachment of Donald Trump?
It would be difficult, but you never know.
Oh, boy. It's a great conspiracy theory. See, I'm going to stick with my conspiracy theory that Al Franken told a lie today, that he made everybody believe that he was resigning. And in fact, he's got people running headlines that he resigned, and he has not resigned. He has promised that he will resign in a couple of weeks, and I believe he is going to renege on that promise. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a conspiracy theory Thursday, I should say. I was just looking at this story that just broke. Apparently, the guy who masterminded Washington State's biggest ever Ponzi scheme has now escaped from prison. We'll get to the details as they become available. And I still haven't had anybody tell me why it's not a reasonable theory to believe that Al Franken, who came out today and did not resign, but he's got everybody in America, or everybody but me, saying that he did resign. He didn't resign. He promised that in the coming weeks, he promises to resign. And if you believe an Al Franken promise, well, I kind of feel sorry for you. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to Burien, listening on Talk Radio 570. Richard's on the line. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Thanks for having me on, Lars. I was listening to the broadcast of Franken earlier, and I thought I heard him talk something about a replacement, and he referred to the replacement as her. And
he did.
I haven't got any way to rebroadcast.
He did. No, he did. And in fact, my producer and I were sitting here. I had watched it live, but I roll it to tape. We say tape. It's actually going onto a digital recorder. And as we went back through it for me to pull the sound bites from it, he does refer to his replacement as her. But I wonder if that's just one of these sleazy Al Franken tricks to say that because it's women that he offended, that maybe his replacement will be a woman, or maybe he has somebody specific in mind for the to replace him until the special election.
Well, I thought it had indicated that he had actually talked to the governor, and that the governor had indicated that There was going to be a female to replace.
I thought as of today, the governor has officially said he hasn't chosen anybody yet. So, the other funny thing is that you know that he'll be replaced temporarily, but then what's going to happen is the person has to run for re-election anyway. So it's going to have to go back into that cycle of election. But as far as I know at this point, there's been no choice unless Franken knows something behind the scenes. But do you think he's actually going to quit?
Oh, I think everything you explained about his motives, I think, are true. He may just plain flat weasel out of this so-called resigning that he's talking about.
I'm going to keep my powder dry till next Tuesday. Thanks for the call, Richard. Let's go to Naysayer Tom. Hey, Naysayer Tom, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about today?
I don't think Al Franken should resign.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, why should he? Why should we?
Because 36 of his fellow Democrats think he ought to be gone, and all of the Republicans think he ought to be gone. So at that point, should he be gone?
Guess what? So guess what? Why isn't Blake Fernhold and your Louisiana congressman elects to frequent prostitutes? Why aren't they gone?
I think they probably will be too, and I think they're very much hanging in the balance.
Texas? How about the guy down in Texas that's texting his junk out there, you know, blaming the girl?
He apparently did send a picture of himself naked, and he's not one of those people probably who should be seen naked or pictured naked.
High moral standards on your part, too, right?
Well, can you tell me something?
Hold on a second,
Tom. Can you tell me something?
You guys are making for him.
Tom, I'm not making excuses for him, but tell me this. When we talk about morals, I have a rule that I don't get pictures taken of me naked, and my wife has the same rule. We don't take pictures of each other naked, nor do we send a picture. Hold on. I know, but we're talking about moral standards. You asked me about moral standards. Yeah. Do you think that it's immoral for a guy who is dating a young lady to send her a picture of himself naked, or for her to send a picture to her boyfriend? Is that a moral transgression?
Is it a moral transgression? Yeah, I think so.
It is. So has your girlfriend ever seen you naked?
No.
Okay, she's never seen you naked?
I don't have a girlfriend.
Okay, if you have, have you ever had a... How old are you now, Tom? Okay. No, but it's not ridiculous. I'm saying, how old are you?
Come on, Lars.
How old are you?
This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. You know what I'm talking about here.
No, I don't. Because I don't know that I could question the morality of somebody who's going out with somebody. I've said I don't do it myself, but do you think it's immoral for a person who's of age? Hold on. Please wait till I'm done. Do I think that congressmen do all the same things that all of us do? They make love to their significant other. They sleep with their significant other. I know. It's like thinking about your parents doing it. You don't want to think about it. But on the other hand, you know they do these things. They break wind occasionally. They go to the restroom occasionally. They take a shower. They wash their armpits. I understand. All I'm saying is, do you think it's immoral if a guy is going out with a young lady and they are that familiar for them to send pictures of themselves to each other? Is that immoral?
Oh, God. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm asking for the fact that you can't answer the question has told me the answer to the question, unfortunately. Do I think it's a good idea to people to take pictures of yourself naked? No, because once you take the picture and once you've sent it over the internet, it is likely to leak out somewhere. Let's go to Charlie in Prosser, Washington. Charlie, do you have a girlfriend or a wife?
Well, I've got a wife.
Has she ever seen you naked?
I think so, probably.
Okay. Well, we got that settled. What's on your mind today?
The other day you talked about the immigration deal where they couldn't use a deduction for labor if they were an illegal alien.
Oh, this is the state of Washington has apparently gone after the private company that runs the Immigration Detention Center in Tacoma. And they have said that they think that the detainees who are now, while they're being detained, some of them are put to work or they're offered work, janitorial work, work in the kitchen, things like that, because they're detained preparatory to deporting them. Right now, they get paid $1 a day for doing that kind of thing, but they're getting 3 hots and a cot and everything else. So the state of Washington has taken the position that they think those detainees should be paid minimum wage, $11 an hour, if they are doing work while they're in detention. That was the gist of it. And what I said was, if you're going to treat them like employees and pay them minimum wage, you have to be able to legally hire them. But you can't legally hire illegal aliens, right?
That's right.
Okay, so what's your comment or question?
Well, I wanted to know you said there was some congressman or some legislator from the Midwest somewhere that presented a bill to the...
Steve King. Yeah, Steve King has a bill that in which if they pass the bill and it's been in Congress for more than a decade, that it would require every employer in America to e-verify their employees. And if you don't e-verify your employees, when you submit your taxes at the end of the year as a business and you say, I employed Jackson and Donovan and Carl, that if I don't prove that they are legal workers with E-Verify, then I'm not allowed to deduct their wages. And I said that that simple change in the IRS rules would solve most of the illegal alien problem in America, because every illegal alien would become functionally impossible to keep on as an employee. It'd be too expensive. And it's Steve King.
That is absolutely correct. Now, what's the name of this legislator again?
It's the same as the horror writer, but it's not the horror writer. Steve King from Iowa, and he's a good man.
I think so. He's got a good idea.
And by the way, it doesn't cost anything. Most of the illegal alien enforcement schemes would cost money. This doesn't cost anything. Because what happens is every business in America, when they find out, if they find out this bill had passed, and it hasn't passed yet, but if a Republican Congress would pass it and they would make it law, what would happen is every business would have the young lady or the young man who runs the business office would come down to the boss and say, "Boss, we got to get rid of our illegal aliens." And the boss would say, "Why?" And the business manager would say, "Because if we keep them on the payroll, we can't deduct their wages, and we're going to owe the IRS a giant pile of money." And the boss would then say, "Well, then, for goodness sake, get rid of those illegal aliens and hire some legal workers." And the illegal aliens would go down the road and find out they could not get a job anywhere. And then many of them would simply remove themselves from our country.
You got it right there, and it's a simple and wonderful fix.
And doesn't cost any money. Back in just a moment. Thanks for the call. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. By the way, full credit in this one to the Seattle Times, which sent out an alert this hour. There's a guy by the name of Frederick Darren Berg, a man who bilked investors of $100 million in Washington State's biggest Ponzi scheme ever. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison. That was about 5 years ago. He just walked away from federal prison. Now imagine this. If you had cheated people of $100 million, would you have stashed some of it somewhere? A deputy supervisor in the marshal's office in Fresno, California, confirms that Berg from Mercer Island, he's a 55-year-old guy, is a fugitive. He walked away from a work camp at the U.S. Penitentiary at Atwater, California, yesterday afternoon. He is listed as escaped on the Bureau of Prisons inmate locator. A news release from the U.S. Bureau of Prisons says Berg was discovered missing around 3:30 yesterday afternoon from the 130-inmate minimum security work camp, which is it's in central California, holds about 1,200 male inmates. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison in Seattle 5 years ago after pleading guilty to defrauding hundreds of investors of more than $100 million through the Meridian Mortgage Investment Fund that he ran for about 10 years. Beginning in 2001 and continuing for a decade, this is from the Times, the FBI says Berg used investor money for the purchase of a condo in Seattle, a house in La Quinta, a $1.4 million condo in San Francisco, a $5.5 million home on Mercer Island, on which he spent another $5 million. He spent $5.5 million to buy and fly two Learjets and at least $3.5 million on the operation and frequent modification of several yachts. He also spent $45 million on a failed bus line. In 2010, when he claimed to be cooperating with bankruptcy trustees, the FBI learned that he had concealed $400,000, which he used to make lease payments on his apartment and buy a couple of Porsches. Imagine this. And now the guy has walked away. I'm willing to bet he's probably got some of that money stashed somewhere. Let's go to Naysayer Scott. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program. Naysayers always go to the head of the line on this program. What's on your mind?
Tell me, Laura, who should get a job, an illegal immigrant or an American citizen?
An American citizen.
Okay. So you have a private corporation that's hiring illegal immigrants at a buck an hour where they could be hiring good old American citizens at minimum wage plus. And you want them to keep hiring illegal immigrants.
No, I don't. I want them. They're not hiring them out of choice. They're hiring them because they're trying to confine them preparatory to deportation at the lowest possible cost. So if you have a bunch of detainees in this Tacoma Detention Center and you have things that have to be done in there, janitorial work, kitchen work, things like that, if we go out and hire American citizens to do it, to cook their food, to clean their clothes, to wash, you know, to mop their floors. That's an additional cost that will be paid by American taxpayers, or we could pay the illegal aliens $1 a day so that they can make a little pocket money before they are deported from America and they wash their own floors and wash their own clothes and cook their own food. What's wrong with that?
Well, there's already a precedent where a private corporation hire inmates that they have to pay them minimum wage or not a living wage. So I don't see where the company has a leg to stand on.
Well, but they do because you can't legally hire these people. You know, they're illegal aliens. The whole reason they're confined is that they're illegally in America. If you're illegally in America, you can't work a regular job. However, does it make sense to have those people do some of the work that's necessary to be performed to keep them locked up? Same way we have prison inmates who are hired to do some of the jobs behind prison walls so that we don't have to hire people and at added extra expense to make it possible to run the prison, right?
True, but if they work for a private corporation, they get paid a living wage.
Not if they're not a legal employee, and they're not legal employees. Let's go to Tony in Tillamook. Hey, Tony, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey there, Lars. Happy day from your old stomping grounds here in Tillamook.
Thank you very much.
Hey, so I was listening to Markley Van Camp earlier talking about the House of Representatives.
So thank you very much for the call. Tony, I'm just going to have to, you know, the fact is, if you lie to the producers, if you don't tell the producers the truth, then I just have to drop your call. Let's go to Jeff in Vancouver. Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing very well today. Thank you.
Fantastic. Hey, I appreciate everything that you do for the American population, especially for the Republicans. I enjoy listening to you every day.
Thank you.
I got a question that hopefully isn't going to be too difficult.
Well, we're about 20 seconds from the top of the hour, so I may have to hold you over into the next hour. What's the question, real quick?
Well, if my wife and I make a combined income of about $220,000 a year,
yeah.
I work in Washington, she works in Oregon, we live in Washington.
You're going to have to hold the rest of the question. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and just to refresh your memory, if you didn't hear my conspiracy theory from earlier, Al Franken gave a speech today. He did not resign. He said, I plan to submit a resignation at some point in the next few weeks. I believe that he's actually not planning to do that. If Roy Moore is elected in Alabama next Tuesday, I think that Al Franken will come out and renege on that possibility. And he will say, I'm not going to resign because I have to save the Senate from Roy Moore. That's the possibility. Or that they will use him as a tool to take down Roy Moore. I don't think either one of those is going to work. Jeff was on the line, though, before the top of the hour. Not Jeff, I don't hold people through many times, but you had a question about the GOP tax plan. What is the question?
Yeah, so I appreciate you holding me over. Quick question. So if my wife works in Portland and we live in Washington and Vancouver,
yeah,
combined together, we're at about $250,000 a year.
Congratulations. That's a good income.
Thank you. Well, you know what? It's been going to college and everything else. So, but two kids, etc. Obviously, this tax plan is going to be something that's good for America, and I think it's going to be good for us as well. But can you kind of explain it? How is this going to be a benefit for us?
It may actually hurt you. And I'll be honest, because I'm not an accountant, but you've got a complicated situation. You are a little bit like me in that I work in Portland in our studios, and I live in Vancouver because Tina and I chose to live close to family. It doesn't give me a tax benefit at all. In fact, I've kind of accepted a tax penalty over the last 15 years because of that arrangement, because I still have to pay Washington licensing fees on my cars. I pay property taxes in Washington State. I pay income taxes in Oregon, and there is no break from it. But because you are now allowed to deduct state and local taxes from your federal taxes, without getting too far into this, because remember, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a CPA. If you're now able to deduct the taxes that you pay to the state of Oregon on your wife's income and your income, whatever it is that's taxed to the state of Oregon, and under the depending on how they remember, this bill isn't done yet. They still have to take it to conference committee and work out the differences between the House version and the Senate version, which were a little bit different on what they call the SALT issue, state and local taxes. Depending on how they finally write the final language, it may mean that because you lose the deductibility of the state and local taxes, but you're gaining on some other things that you may end up paying more. I mean, it depends on your particular circumstance. Overall, it's going to benefit everybody in America, virtually every tax bracket. But on some individual cases, especially in high tax states like Oregon, California, and New York, there are going to be some people who are going to get hurt.
And if you make combined over $200,000, I guess that puts me in like the upper class. I'm not middle class.
It does. It does do that because there's a little chart that was actually put together by the folks at Cato, which is the libertarian group. And in round numbers, the people in your tax bracket, you said a little over 200,000?
Yes, sir.
The people who make between 200,000 and 500,000 a year as a group right now pay $468 billion, almost half a trillion dollars in taxes. Your taxes are going to go down by $59 billion. In other words, about, 13%. No, it's 12.6. So, but as an individual, that includes a lot of people who may live in Texas, which is a low-tax state. Washington State, more of a low-tax state. Idaho, low-tax state. Those people are going
to
get more.
Yeah, that could be. That could add even more to it just because of the fact that the company that I work for is based out of Texas.
Well,
so. Except who knows?
You're paying taxes on where you sleep and on where you work. So those are the two primary ways. So the truth of the matter is you really have to call. Do you do your own taxes or do you have somebody else do it?
Oh, no. We send it in for, $700 a year or something like that, somebody to do our taxes.
And you know what I would do? I would call them up and say or send them an email and say, look, given our tax situation, are we likely to get hurt, to be better off, or to be about the same? And is there anything we can do to change our circumstances to make that, more attractive?
Yeah, which I'll do, but I still think that, I mean, for the country as a whole, this has got to go through. It just has to.
I agree. And this is why, Jeff, I may end up paying more. I don't know. But I'm just going to find out when I find out. Like you, I pay somebody else to do my taxes because my theory is that whoever does your taxes, if they do it as a full-time job, they know about some of the ins and outs of the tax code that the average person who does it once a year is never going to figure out. But good luck to you. Let's go to Gabe. Hey, Gabe, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
So, Lars, I heard that caller that you had that said that Burger King was applying their flag.
Was I right to be suspicious of that?
No, you weren't. He was dead on. I went over there, and I walked in, and I asked him. I said, hey, you know, today's Pearl Harbor Day, and you should be flying your flag at half-mast like the rest of the country. And they said that it's not their problem, and I needed to leave.
Wow.
So I called the Burger King corporate office, and I filed a complaint. And I would suggest that any other veterans that have heard this should go over there and file a complaint, too, because it's absolutely ridiculous.
That is ridiculous to say we don't like the flag, which is what the original gentleman said. And I just thought.
Correct.
How, Gabe, in the world does somebody get a job? I mean, even a job as a burger flipper or a counter person who is so thick upstairs that they don't realize that insulting the flag of the United States of America, if you're an American business, is probably not going to work out well with almost any customer you're going to encounter. I mean,
Lars?
Why? Tell
because
me why.
They see it on every single Sunday when someone kneels for that flag. So now it's okay.
You know, that's a good theory. That's actually a very good theory. Gabe, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mike and Ben. Hey, Mike. I had my theory on Franken. You've got your theory on Franken. Tell us about your theory.
Well, Lars, I think I agree with your theory, but I don't think you took it quite far enough. I believe that this is probably a deal that has been worked up with the Democratic leadership, and that if Roy Moore gets elected, they can all say, well, you hired yours, so we're going to keep ours. And you know, why should we be forcing our guy out? If you're going to bring in your harasser, we're going to keep our harasser. And even the I think we can take this all the way back to Bill Clinton, where now they have a convenient reason to look the other way.
Except I think you're right. You could be right, but here's the difference. When people voted in Minnesota for Al Franken the last go around, they did not know what a creep he was toward women. The people of Alabama know everything that's been said about, I mean, you'd have had to have lived in a cave somewhere not to have heard everything there is to be said about Judge Roy Moore. And some people believe all of the charges against him. Some people believe none of them. And some people believe some of them. And they're going to vote on Tuesday. So I see a whole different equation when you say the voters know everything about me and they're still going to choose me. And they don't believe the charges. They do believe the charges. In a lot of ways, I keep going back. The best example I can think of in politics that's like this is Marion Barry, the former mayor of Washington, D.C., who got caught in a hotel room with cocaine and a prostitute. And he famously said, the B word set me up, blah, 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 and all that. He got reelected. And I thought at the time, I thought that was ridiculous, but it was the choice of local voters. So what do you say when somebody knows all the dirt there is to be said about a candidate and they elect him because they've chosen him as their U.S. senator? If they choose to do that, that's their choice. But Al Franken, how do you compare that to a guy that people didn't know the background of when they voted on him last? So I think if the Democrats try to make that comparison, it's one that's not going to fly with the voters.
Well, I guess I'd have to ask the question, and you probably have a better outlook on this or ability to check on this rather than the rest of us. But I would make, are the people in Minnesota crying for his skull? And how many people in Minnesota are raising? Because we hear it nationally and we hear it from the senators, but I haven't heard anything about Minnesota yet. It's his constituency. And secondly, I would make the contention that you start playing at this level and the media is going to take that argument. If somebody makes that argument, the media is going to take that argument and they're going to run with it.
Well, they may, but here's the counter I would offer you. 36 or more, there may be more than that now, Democrats have said, we think this man should leave. If Franken then reneges on his promise to resign, then the reporters should go back to those Democrats and say, are you willing to work with this guy now? And if they say, well, yeah, we're willing to work with him because Alabama elected somebody, that's a pretty thin answer. It means that your moral judgment on the man is based on what happens in a different state with a different set of voters and a different candidate that somehow.
Come on, Lars. Yeah, to be fair, you're talking about the liberal media. You look around you every day. You and I both know they don't give a darn about what if somebody will make an argument that is good for Democrats and liberals, you know so well. All you got to do is go back to the arguments over Bill Clinton. When he was being impeached for the Monica Lewinsky thing, and they'd say, well, there was a lot of convenient arguments made about him. How many times do we hear that?
And they said it's his own personal matter. Well, it's not a personal matter when you're doing that kind of thing in the Oval Office. Or the oral office, whichever one you want to call it. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. By the way, the latest breaking news, and this literally from just minutes ago, Representative Trent Franks, Republican of Arizona, is expected to resign. Now, this guy was first elected to the Congress in 2002. He was considered a 2012 Senate bid before he decided against it. Frank's 8th district in Arizona backed Donald Trump by 21 points in the election. And Roll Call is reporting right now, and this is literally from the last dozen minutes or so, that Trent Franks is expected to resign from Congress. He did not confirm or deny any plans to resign, but he expected to make a statement today. We will have a statement a bit later. That's all I can tell you now. The statement will explain. It's unclear exactly why Franks is stepping down, but one Arizona Republican said there had been rumors of inappropriate behavior. The Republican said the congressman had apparently been making plans to run for the Senate, but he abruptly canceled those plans. There have been rumors swirling around him for years, at least since 2012. And they said there won't be many people on Capitol Hill who will be surprised by this. But literally, multiple sources on Capitol Hill are reporting that Trent Franks is planning to resign from Congress. I guess this would be the first time we've seen somebody in politics resign before the allegations against him have even been made public. To your calls now. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, Lars. I stopped over at Burger King.
Yeah, the one that's been getting some discussion this afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah, so I heard the first caller, and I thought, well, I happen to be heading back home from work. I'll stop there.
All right.
And I'm gonna try to put this as politely as possible because of the PC culture.
Yeah.
You know, the Woodland School District, how they're teaching their teacher Spanish on a voluntary basis.
Yes, on a voluntary basis. Yeah. I wonder how many scare quotes we should put around voluntary, but.
Yeah. Each one of them would have qualified for the English portion of that.
Ah, I see.
So that's one thing I observed. Second thing, I didn't. I'm assuming some of the people that have gone there came off very strong.
Probably.
And that's probably why they were asked to leave. I kept it nondescript. They said that it's corporate's responsibility to come and lower their flag.
Yeah.
So I call shenanigans, because you're telling me that some corporate guy is going to drive all over the metro area or beyond to lower flags.
I doubt it.
When there's a federal holiday or whatever. Yeah, baloney. So,
well, the other thing is that if you're an aspiring young man or woman who's become the manager or the crew shift manager, I would expect that you could probably call your boss, if it's during daylight hours, and say, hey, boss, we've had some comments from customers. I think we should drop the flag to half staff. And the boss would probably say, that's a good idea. Go ahead and do that. And then tomorrow morning, raise it back up, right?
Yeah. So their phones have been going off the hook. So, you know, we've doxed them pretty well.
Well,
but you know, which, I think the calls to corporate, or maybe a request to comment on your part or another media's part of, you know, so this is what we were told by your employees at this store. Is this true? Because if it is, it seems like a huge time waster, and it doesn't make much sense.
It is, and I'll tell you what. I'll see if we can get a hold of somebody at corporate. Although, I got to tell you, Jeff, every time I think about that these days, it's like wading into quicksand. Because, you know, you call and then somebody says, well, we'll have somebody call you back. And they call you back a week from now and say, what can we help you with? And we say, well, a week ago, we wanted to know this. But if they want to call in, I'd be glad to have them on. 866-439-5277. Jeff, thanks for the call. Let's go to Joseph on Puget Island. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the program. How are things on the lower Columbia River?
Pretty good today.
What's on your mind?
Cool, but nice. Well, one of the points I haven't heard brought up here with all these people complaining about the Senate nominee or the guy running for Senate there in Alabama, you know, he's only been accused. He denies it, whereas Al Franken has confessed or admitted to inappropriate behavior.
Although today he came back out and effectively denied it and said many of the charges against him are untrue. So
I don't doubt that many of them are untrue, but he has confessed to some already.
Yes, he has.
Admitted to them.
And there's a picture of one of them.
Right. So, I mean, that's inappropriate behavior. Leave the Senate. But if you're only, I mean, when did this nation become a country of you're guilty till proven innocent? I thought we were innocent till proven guilty.
You're innocent till proven guilty in court. But when it comes to the court of public opinion, and politics is definitely the court of public opinion, you don't have to have a jury or a judge or anything else. It's what the public thinks of you. And I don't think the public thinks much of Al Franken. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, I've had a couple of you email and say, I'm listening on TuneIn, or I'm listening on one of these other, you know, Brand X kinds of streaming services. When you do that, you're likely to get ads like the ones that are running for Doug Jones. You're not going to get them if you use my website, which is LarsLarson.com, which is where you should be streaming the show from, if you don't mind. Let's go to Tom in Seattle, listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Lars, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking.
So I wanted your opinion. I had a thought this morning regarding moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. You know, the media and everything is saying that basically now we can't be a trusted, country to help negotiate peace with the Palestinians and all that. Do you think that maybe this is a move to help repair a relationship with Israel that was, in my opinion, pretty heavily damaged by our previous administration?
I think that Donald Trump was always going to be better with Israel than Barack Obama. I mean, Barack Obama, as you know, treated Benjamin Netanyahu very shabbily when he was in our country.
Oh, he treated him horribly.
It was terrible. People don't understand this. I want to paint the picture for 30 seconds, Tom, if you don't mind. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, I've not met him, but I've had him on the show before. He came to the White House when Obama was still president. He was invited by our president, by our country. He was there having a meeting with the president. And at one point during the meeting, toward the dinner hour, they'd been meeting maybe an hour or so. The president, Obama at that time, stood up, said, "Well, I'm going upstairs to have dinner with my family. Effectively, make yourself at home." And he walked out of the room. And I thought, boy, if you did that in your own house, let alone in a business setting, I mean, imagine what your boss would do to you, Tom, if you had a client, an important client, or a customer, or somebody from your own trade over for a meal or over for a meeting. And in the middle of the meeting, you stood up and said, "I'm going to lunch. You guys do whatever you want to do, but I'm going to go have some lunch." Can you imagine what your boss, the American people in this case, or the boss would say about your behavior?
It would not go over well, to say the least.
No, and if you did it in your own home, like, you know, a friend says, "Hey, I want you to meet one of my buddies." You go, bring him over. And then you're sitting around on the patio having a beverage or two. And then all of a sudden you stand up and go, "Well, I'm going in to dinner. You guys do whatever you want to do." And you just walk away. You don't say, "Would you like to join me? Could I have dinner brought in for you?"
That's what I would do.
Well, that's what any civilized person would do, but not Barack Hussein Obama. But as far as improving our situation, here's the thing we ought to think about that Donald Trump is busting the mold on. We've been told forever, you can't just bomb Syria because, you know, just because they launch chemical weapons attack. Well, Donald Trump did that. And he bombed an airfield, and he got the message across, and we haven't heard much more about chemical attacks in Syria. We had a bunch of jihadis holed up in a cave in Afghanistan, and we dropped the mother of all bombs on them, collapsed the cave, and killed about 90 of them. And we didn't hear much more from them. You know, I know we didn't kill all the terrorists in Afghanistan. The place is rife with them, but whatever. And people keep telling Donald Trump, "You can't do that," and then he does it. And in many cases, it has the desired effect. So when folks say, "Gosh, for the last 40 years, we've been kowtowing to the Palestinians. They've never had a country. They don't deserve a country. They've been offered a country a dozen different times by the Israelis. They've been offered the chance to have their own country right next door and to live in peace. They've been offered 98% solutions. And each and every time, they have walked away and said no. And at the same time, they have engaged in an ongoing terrorist activities of murdering little old ladies and babies and families and young men and women just standing there at the bus stop, and some jihadi comes up and sticks a knife in their neck, and the Palestinian Authority pays the family of that shaheed or whatever they call the martyrs, you know, that do this kind of stuff. And the Palestinian Authority gives them money, and the U.S. taxpayers are funding some of this. And then they say, "Well, don't you dare acknowledge Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. If you do, we'll go out and burn things down, and we'll blow things up, and we'll cause trouble," which is what they're doing right now. Except what I find kind of delicious about this, Tom, I really do, because I despise the Palestinian leadership. The individual Palestinians, who knows? You know, they're subject to the idiots who are running the place. But the Palestinian leadership are just they reward terrorism. But what I love is when they get really mad about something, they start burning their own house down. And that's what they're doing. They're burning down Bethlehem, which is a city that has a special place in my heart because I'm a Protestant Christian, but it's in the hands of the Palestinians. So how do you expect them to treat the town? They're burning the town down. And they're also burning down things in Gaza. So this is a crowd that is so irrational that when they say, if you do that, you'll make us so mad, we'll burn our own house down. My response is something along the lines of, knock yourself out. Have fun.
Yeah. If you want a match.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're just like, if you don't do that, we're going to shoot ourselves. Okay, go for it. And you know, the idea, see, I think the position the Palestinians have taken for the last few years, the last couple of decades, is if you side with Israel by saying Israel has a capital, then you're no longer neutral. I think the act of not acknowledging a capital for Israel is what's not neutral. And here's why. The position of the Palestinians to this day is we are only going to accept a solution that leaves every single Jew either dead or gone from the Middle East. All right? That's their position. So their position includes you can't give them a capital or acknowledge they have a capital for their country because their country, the Jews' country, has to be gone. That's the PA position. So if we've gone along with this for all these years and said, okay, we won't acknowledge that Jerusalem is and has been for thousands of years the capital of the state of Israel, we'll go along with that. We've actually sided with the Palestinians by doing that. What I think it would be fair is this. If the Palestinians, instead of just blowing things up and burning things down and killing people, if they would say, hey, to the United States, you've now acknowledged that Jerusalem's the capital by saying you're going to put the U.S. embassy on the piece of land you've owned forever in West Jerusalem. We imagine a day in the future where we will have our own state and part of it will be East Jerusalem and the West Bank. And you know, we're working in that direction. Would you mind putting a U.S. consular office in East Jerusalem so that you show that you have equal faith in both the Jewish state and a future Palestinian state? If they propose that, I think that would be a reasonable ask for them. But saying...
I do too, but that makes too much sense.
Well, and you know what? I think what doesn't make sense is when the Palestinians have taken this, frankly, evil and terroristic stance that they hate their neighbors, the Jews, so much that they want them all dead. And we've kind of gone along with the program... continuing to go on along with the program because all the supposedly smart people in Washington, D.C. say if you break from the program, then there won't be a chance of peace in the Middle East. Well, there hasn't been a chance of peace in the Middle East for the last 40 years. Nobody's made any substantial progress since Sadat and Begin back in the Jimmy Carter era. You know, one of the few good things to come out of that was a permanent peace between the state of Israel and the state of Egypt. Right. And that's one of the reasons we give foreign aid to Egypt and foreign aid to Israel. And Israel actually gave back to Egypt a piece of land bigger than their entire country. It's called the Sinai Peninsula. So if you didn't want a better way of saying we're in favor of peace, when the folks that you've sworn to kill say, look, we can live next to each other. We're going to give you back a chunk of territory that we now control that is bigger than our whole country. And that's our show of good faith. And that peace has lasted for the last, you know, since the 70s, for 40 years. So if the Palestinians want to do something positive, they could stop burning down their own neighborhood. And by the way, Bethlehem, too, which is special to all of us Christians, but the PA doesn't give a damn about that, except for the money they make on the Church of the Nativity and on the city of Bethlehem, where they'll sell you all kinds of gewgaws because they want to make money off all the tourists who come there. If they'd stop doing that and say, hey, U.S., show some faith in us. Tell us you'll open up an office in East Jerusalem and that you want to work toward a two-state solution, and we'll get closer to the idea of letting our neighbors live. That might actually work.
I agree. You know, though, unfortunately, the only thing they really understand, and it's been proven over thousands of years, is force. They don't negotiate. They just, you know, they only understand and respect force.
Do you know, Tom, you're talking just the way I've heard the smartest people I know in D.C. talk. They've said in the Arab world and the Muslim world in particular, acquiescence, compromise are weakness. Force is strength. When Donald Trump says, I don't care what you say you're going to do, burn down your own neighborhood, I'm going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I think the Muslims and the Arabs actually respect a leader who's willing to stand up to them and say, whatever you say you're going to do, go ahead and do it. But we're recognizing the capital of this country. And I think it's going to break down some of the dominant paradigm that's been holding things back there for all these times, because too many Americans want to kowtow to the Muslims, including our former president. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Every week we get an update on illegal alien doings in the Pacific Northwest, serving the Radio Northwest Network. And David Cross joins us now. David, welcome back to the program. Thanks a lot for taking the time. What do you know this week?
Lars, we had the Oregon Department of Corrections criminal alien report from November, and there were 978 criminal aliens in the Oregon Department of Correction prison system. 201 of them were from Multnomah County. What made Multnomah County significant is Sergio Jose Martinez, a criminal alien that had been deported 20 times, was pled guilty to the crimes he committed against two women in July of this year.
Yeah.
And he was sentenced to 35 years in prison for crimes like sodomy and kidnapping and sexual abuse. And you know, the number one crime criminal aliens commit is sexual abuse. And there were 201 criminal aliens in the Oregon Department of Correction prison system in November serving time for sexual abuse. And Sergio Jose Martinez is going to be joining those criminal aliens.
Boy, it's crazy. We've got to get this problem solved, and we've got a president who can get it solved if the Congress will just got on board. David, thank you very much for the update. By the way, I want to send my props and kudos to a young lady in Spokane, Vina Mickelson, who, as the Spokane Spokesman Review reports, knows the toll that the assault on Pearl Harbor 76 years ago today, the sneak attack that launched America into World War II, had on her husband of more than six decades. He fought that war to the very end, says Mickelson, who's been widowed for 4 years. Her husband, Dennis, at night, he'd just throw his arms out, fighting, trying to save himself, I guess. It got so I couldn't even sleep with him. The 86-year-old Mickelson, who married the sailor from Wilbur, Washington, after a two-week courtship, now orchestrates the small ceremony commemorating the attack from her one-bedroom apartment at Harvard Park, a South Hill retirement home in Spokane. With $59 in the bank for the Spokane chapter of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association and the memories of hosting monthly gatherings of vets at the home she made with Dennis in Medical Lake, Mickelson says she's determined to defy the march of time and continue to honor those who woke up to the horror of a Japanese attack that killed 2,403. I just think it's important that we do something for Pearl Harbor, said Mickelson, for my husband. Vina Mickelson, 86 years old and still making sure that Pearl Harbor is remembered in her community, something that's forgotten too often in other places. Let's go to Kevin in Bellingham. Kevin, thanks a lot for listening on KGMI. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was thinking your research department is probably much better than mine.
No, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see.
There was a professor back in the mid-80s, I think, or early 90s, who was accused of some sort of sexual misconduct. He was a professor at Western Washington.
Yeah.
He was denied access to his guns, and I can't find that story.
From the 1980s? That might be a tough one.
Yeah, that probably. Yeah.
That's pre-internet by at least a decade or so.
Yeah, I know. But the lady later denied it, and I think that's a perfect example of why we shouldn't rush to believe any accusations that somebody makes.
Well, Kevin, I'm okay with not rushing, but if you're an Alabama voter and Tuesday is the election, how are you going to make your decision?
If I were an Alabama voter, I'm pretty sure I would believe that everything the media says is out to get anyone who does not think the way they do.
That doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong, though, does it?
It doesn't mean they're wrong, no.
So that's the only thing is when I've heard people say, well, we should have due process and we should have this researched. Some of this, there's no way to prove it one way or the other. There never will be. There will not be a court trial over this. So Should we accept that if the people of Alabama, having heard the accusations against Judge Roy Moore, choose him as their senator, that he should be seated in the United States Senate?
Yeah, we're the United States, not the homogenous states.
I agree with that. We are the United States. 50 little laboratories of democracy, and isn't it great? Kevin, thanks a lot. Kari, it's real quick. We got about 20 seconds to the break. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to agree with you. It's all about leadership. And if this guy with this Burger King can't, train his people to be respectful, how can we trust him to train them to treat our food respectfully enough that it's safe? I mean, it all comes around in a big circle.
All the way around to leadership. Kari, thank you very much. You've got the Lars Larson Show.